Welcome to International Edition, where we take a closer look at stories of the day, social media, and entertainment. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. There has been a surprising and violent attack on the Afghan parliament. We'll hear about the scene there. Murder here in the States at an African-American Bible meeting has raised debate over the Confederate flag. We pose the question, is Twitter in trouble?
They have a great number of users, but have failed to figure out how to turn a serious profit.
And later we visit the music of Kelly Clarkson. It's coming up here on The Voice of America. Taliban militants have targeted Afghanistan's parliament. Reporter Ayaz Ghul is in our South Asia Bureau in Islamabad, where he is following this story and joins us on the line. Hi, Ayaz.
Hi.
Hi. What have you got on this story so far?
Well, this was quite a dramatic development this morning in Kabul because, the capital is, especially the parliament, is located in a high security zone, but still a group of Taliban suicide bombers, they were seven in number according to officials in Kabul, they managed to storm the parliament. They started the attack with a car bomb at the main entry gate, and then some of them tried to enter the building, but that's where the security forces stopped them. However, the siege lasted for nearly two hours, and now the security forces say all the seven attackers have been killed. But it has sent a very strong message that whatever the Afghan security forces have done in terms of dealing with the Taliban insurgency after the withdrawal of the NATO forces, they have so far not been able to prevent the Taliban from launching these kind of high-profile attacks. And at the same time, the insurgent group has made some territorial gains in the northern provinces.
Could you please describe the scene there where these explosions occurred?
As soon as the attack occurred, what we were told by the Afghan Interior Ministry officials that some of the bombers have entered the building. In fact, there was an under-construction building nearby the parliament, and some of them took positions on that building. But they were then surrounded by security forces, Afghan army and police, and all the roads then leading to the parliament were cordoned off, were sealed by the security forces. And one could see the smoke rising from inside the parliament building. And when the first explosion occurred, the parliament was in session, and it was basically readying to endorse the presidential decision or the president, the defense minister designate Masoom Stanakzai. But then the first explosion happens at the gate of the parliament. It was so powerful that the session was being broadcast live, and we could see that the speaker's chair, he was presiding the session, and his chair shook so hard, but still he tried to tell the lawmakers that maybe it's a short circuit in the electrical wires. But then there were three more explosions following the first one, and that's when all the lawmakers started running for their lives. And what we have been told by the Afghan officials that so far all the parliamentarians are safe and were unhurt in this attack.
Has the government made any specific statements concerning this attack today?
We just have a brief statement from the Interior Ministry spokesman, Siddiq Siddiqui, who says that the situation is under control. All the seven attackers have been killed by the security forces, and that there are 31 or up to 30 people, mostly civilians, have been wounded, and they have been shifted to the hospital. But we don't know the nature of we don't know who these people are, whether they were at the exterior gate when the first explosion occurred, but at least this has been confirmed that no lawmaker is among those who have been wounded.
Well, thank you very much, Ayaz.
Thank you.
We have a lot more coverage of the situation in Afghanistan on our website. You're welcome to come on by and look at it. But social media reporter Michael Lippin has joined me here in the studio. And Michael, what can people find when they go online?
Hi, Susan. Well, yes, one of the top stories on voanews.com is Ayaz Ghul's report on the Afghan parliament attack. And when you go to that page, you'll see a short video clip at the top showing scenes from the aftermath of the assault. You can also find a map showing where exactly in Kabul the attack took place, as well as photos of the spot where the vehicle blew up and the parliament chamber filled with smoke from the blast. Ayaz has actually been quite busy today. He filed another web story for us about Afghanistan. This one headlined, Pakistan discloses secret Afghan-Taliban talks. In that story, Ayaz reports on a revelation from a senior Pakistani official that Islamabad recently facilitated secret talks between the Afghan government and the Taliban in a northwestern Chinese city. We heard just now from Ayaz about the Afghan defense minister-designate Massoum Stanikzai, who was supposed to be confirmed by the parliament today. Well, Ayaz reports that Stanikzai actually represented the Afghan government in those secret talks with the Taliban. So it'll be interesting to see how he reacts to the Taliban disrupting today's parliamentary session that was meant to confirm him in the new job.
How have people been reacting to the attack on social media?
Well, you know, interest in the subject of Afghanistan has gone up on Twitter today. The Topsy analytics site shows that the word Afghanistan has been tweeted 17,000 times in the last 24 hours, and that's the highest daily level in the last month. And most of those tweets appear to be about the Taliban assault on the parliament. Twitter users also have been using the hashtag Afghanistan, although less frequently than the word. One tweet mentioning that hashtag that got attention today was from the U.S. Embassy in Kabul. It tweeted a link to its statement condemning the attack. The embassy said that the attack shows blatant disrespect for democracy and the rule of law. The embassy also said that at this time we offer our sympathies to the people of Afghanistan and the members of parliament who suffered as a result of the incident. And some Twitter users also have been highlighting the fact that the Afghan parliamentary speaker initially appeared unfazed by the bombing, which was caught on video, as Ayaz was mentioning. And that's a sign, perhaps, that such attacks are becoming all too frequent in the country. Susan?
Okay, well, thank you, Michael, for stopping by, as always. You're tuned to VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute. Pope Francis recently issued an urgent warning and challenge to the people of the world to recognize and take action against the harm the pontiff says humans are inflicting on the earth. Environmentalists welcome the Pope's letter or encyclical, one of the highest-ranking documents a pope can release. Climatologist Ray Bradley from the University of Massachusetts.
The issue of global warming and environmental degradation has become so political that it's really great to have somebody who has no political agenda speak on the topic.
Some climate change skeptics were not moved by the Pope's writings. James Taylor is with the Heartland Institute.
I fear that the Pope is getting poor advice. I believe that these actions to address global warming are unnecessary and counterproductive.
Pope Francis and his encyclical on climate change has been hailed as a major intervention in the climate change debate. I'm Rick Pantaleo.
The shooting of nine churchgoers in a historic African-American church in Charleston, South Carolina, has set off a firestorm of debate about the flying of the Confederate flag. That symbol of the South during the war over slavery in the United States still flies over their Capitol grounds. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone joins us here in the studio. Welcome, Jim.
Hi, Susan.
Say, Jim, what's this all about?
Well, this has to do with the alleged shooter of that terrible massacre in the church in Charleston. The alleged shooter, Dylan Roof, posed online, prominently displaying a Confederate battle flag. This is the flag that the Southern states used during the Civil War back in the 1860s. It has become, for many years, an issue in South Carolina. Those who saw the flag as a symbol of Southern pride often argued that it should be allowed to fly over the Capitol grounds, where it has been flying for several years now. But many Americans, including many African Americans, see that flag as a symbol of hate and divisiveness, and they have argued that it should be taken down. And this has now fueled a debate, including some members of the Republican presidential field who are weighing in on the issue.
Well, I'm a born and raised Northerner, so it seems a little strange to me that the Carolinians would want the Confederate flag still flying.
It's a matter of Southern pride. They feel very strongly that it's a symbol of the sort of the Southern traditions that they grew up with, and they're going to defend it no matter what. This is particularly appealing to conservative white voters. It just so happens that South Carolina is a key state in our presidential election process. They actually have the third primary in our process. And many of the Republican presidential contenders, and we have a dozen now, would like their support. So they're being very careful about how they answer this question. Most of the Republican contenders are saying it should be left to the state to decide. But in the wake of this terrible tragedy in Charleston, there's growing calls even within South Carolina to do something different and to take that flag away from the state capitol grounds.
Well, what about the Democrats? Have they said much about
this? Well, Hillary Clinton, back to 2007, said that the flag should be removed. Even Mitt Romney, the Republican presidential nominee in 2012, tweeted over this past weekend that the flag should be taken away. Jeb Bush, the former Florida governor, said when he was governor, he had it relegated to a museum in Florida, and he would like to see the same thing done in South Carolina. But again, they're being very careful. They say it's up to the people of South Carolina, because many of the supporters of the flag see it as a state's rights issue, that the federal government should not be telling the state what to do.
Well, the murder of the nine African Americans and on recent police activities, there have been several shootings of people by police, African Americans, and that's caused riots and more. Well, this has all put a big spotlight on race relations in the United States.
It has, and even President Barack Obama's weighed in on this, saying, obviously there are signs that racism continues to exist in the country. It's something we have to grapple with. Mr. Obama was elected in 2008. Some people hailed that as the first step in a post-racial America where race would not matter as much. And while there are certainly improvements that a lot of people can agree on, there's still a long way to go. And the incidents we've seen over the past year and a half or so involving police treatment of African Americans continues to resonate around the country. And it shows that these issues, they may be tamped down for a time, but they're always just under the radar and ready to pop up again here in the United States.
I think a lot of people saw the election of an African American, President Obama, as a turning point, maybe. The race issue was behind us, and now America is multi-ethnic, and there's race issue is gone. And they were surprised all this is coming up.
Well, one way the president likes to look at it is he talks about we're an imperfect union. We're an imperfect country. The point is we keep trying to get better. And certainly his election in 2008 was a sign people were willing to accept a minority president. But does it remove all ills? Does it cure all the problems of our society? No. And the recent tragic events in Charleston show that we still have a ways to go.
Sometimes presidential candidates like to get into these hot topics early on in the campaigning so that by the time we get near the elections, the subject has died away a bit. Do you think that might be the case here? It's too hot for near the elections?
It's too hot because a lot of them are afraid of offending, I think, conservative voters who are watching them very closely on this. Even former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee said he doesn't see why it should be discussed by presidential contenders. Well, he's going to get some debate on that, especially on the Democratic side. So for now, they're keeping it low key. I have a feeling the pressure will mount and many of them will start to speak up more in the days ahead.
A discussion on whether they should discuss it or act on it, I guess, huh?
Welcome to the State of Our Politics 2015.
Okay, thank you very much, Jim, for stopping by.
Thank you.
Coming up on International Edition, watching out for a popular social media outlet. And Kelly Clarkson is the star of our music feature. The president, the pope, even many ordinary folks have Twitter accounts, including myself. But is that form of social media in trouble? Kevin Paul Scott, author of the book Eight Essential Exchanges, joins us to answer that question. Welcome.
Hey, it's great to be with you today.
Thank you, thank you. Well, what is up with Twitter?
Well, Twitter is struggling right now because they have a great number of users but have failed to figure out how to turn a serious profit. And because of that, the CEO has stepped aside. They kind of have a musical chair CEO right now, a guy who's been in there before, and they're trying to figure out how are they viable, how can they be more user-friendly, and how can they sell more advertising. And it's a tough road to hoe for Twitter.
Well, do you have any suggestions on what they can do to prop themselves up?
Yeah, for a few things. First and foremost, Twitter needs to go outside the box with a big-name CEO or someone who's going to shake things up. What Twitter has done in the past has been effective, but again, still not profitable. So they've got to be willing to try something new. Second, they've got to find a way to integrate advertising more effectively into their platform. For example, the Facebook system is just much more conducive to ads that are relevant to what the individual user is looking at. It's much easier to monitor and track results. Currently on the Twitter platform, these ads are very clear that they're sponsored. They're things that we're typically not interested in and we're scrolling over. And so Twitter advertisers have not seen the value. They haven't been willing to put the money into it. And without advertising revenue, Twitter either has to figure that piece out or they've got to find ways to use their data for other streams of income.
Why is Twitter so popular? Why is it so appealing to people?
Well, the thing that Twitter has done that's been extremely effective is becoming a very quick news source for us, where we may turn to a platform like Facebook to connect with people we know. We may go to Instagram for our friends. We may go to LinkedIn for a business opportunity. Twitter is the best way to get concise news quickly. And so even many of the major news companies leverage Twitter as a way to get their headlines out and hope that you'll click and dive deeper into stories. And Americans like that. But for that reason, the thing that makes Twitter so great is also the thing that makes it more difficult to advertise.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with us today.
Thank you very much.
By the way, do you have a Twitter account?
Yeah, I do have a Twitter account.
Okay, well, thanks again and have a good day.
Thank you.
This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support for Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
It's time for a little something from the music department, and here's our own David Byrd.
She won the very first American Idol, and now Kelly Clarkson has a new song that's climbing the charts. It's called Invincible. It's from her new CD, Piece by Piece, and Larry London joins me to talk about this tune. Larry,
well,
this is another anthem from Kelly Clarkson, I guess.
She's very good at creating music that people can relate to and connect with, and that's one of the keys to her success over the years. And the new album is great, Piece by Piece. She took an off-road for a little bit, did some country music, but she's kind of back in the main lane of the pop world and just finished off with a Heartbeat song, which was her 16th top 40 single. And so the new song, Invincible, as you mentioned, it's an inspirational song. It's a very happy, positive song. And Kelly's in a very positive place right now, despite all of the criticism that she's been undergoing recently because of her weight gain. And so she's okay. She's happy with herself. She said, I love myself, and I am invincible, which is what this song kind of reflects and represents.
You know I was broke down. I hit the ground. I was crying now. I couldn't make no sound. No one hears the silent tears collected. You know I had lost hope. I was all alone. Never been so low till you came along. Teacher, I feel the dots connected.
Now, she had a baby, right? That's
yeah.
Why she had some weight gains.
Well, she's always battled weight. That's been a problem that she's dealt with her entire life. She admits openly that the weight issues have always been troublesome for her. She did drop a few pounds a number of years ago, but since the baby, since the birth of River Rose, it has not been a very easy thing for her to get rid of the weight. But she's happy with herself, as she said. In fact, she said after she finishes her current tour, she's going to try and get pregnant again. She wants to have another baby by the end of this year. She wants to be pregnant.
And this song talks about, you know, issues like overcoming abuse. The video for it has different women in different scenarios. One woman is in a wheelchair. One woman is like in an abusive situation, you know, and it's different ethnicities, different races, et cetera. And is Kelly trying to broaden her appeal with the video, or what exactly is she doing there?
Well, that's an interesting question, David. Kelly, you know, currently appeals to quite a diverse group of people to begin with. They all like her and relate to her. She's a person who's overcome a number of obstacles, as we mentioned a little while ago. She grew up in a very small town in Texas, and they weren't very wealthy. Mom was an English teacher. And so, you know, she's considers herself to be the average kind of person. She doesn't look at herself as a star. She thinks her music is very relatable, and she's very reachable. She's very reachable. She's not kind of up on a perch or anything like that. She wants to be an everybody's person, and I think she comes across that way. You really like Kelly. She's genuine with everything she does. 25 million sales. She's won so many awards, including 12 Billboard Music Awards. So, you know, she's got the appeal that is necessary to make it in the music business these days. And the new song is doing very well. She performed it for the first time on television at the Billboard Award Show.
All right. That's VOA's Larry London. We'd love to hear what you think about this. You can go on to our Facebook page. That's VOA Music. It's facebook.com/VOA-music. You can leave your comments there. Larry also hosts VOA's Border Crossings, which has its own Facebook page. You can contact him there. Maybe he'll play Kelly Clarkson's Invincible.
We'd love to do it.
If you'd like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner and scroll on down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is deeply concerned by the June 16th conviction and sentencing by a Bahraini court of Sheikh Ali Salman, the Secretary General of the Al-Wafaq Opposition Political Society. He was convicted of inciting hatred, promoting disobedience, and insulting public institutions. Sheikh Ali is also a Shia Muslim cleric. Sheikh Ali was jailed in December after he delivered a series of speeches calling for political reform and accountability after his re-election as party leader. His arrest triggered protests across the country. In 2011, at the time of the Arab Spring, dozens died when the government of Bahrain moved to quash protests demanding more rights and an end to discrimination against the majority Shia community by the Sunni royal family. Bahrain has dealt with sporadic unrest since then. The United States has consistently said opposition parties that peacefully voice criticism of the government play a vital role in inclusive, pluralistic states and societies. Creating an atmosphere in which a full range of political opinions can be peacefully expressed is essential in Bahrain, across the Middle East, and globally. Furthermore, this action by the Bahraini court has the potential to further inflame tensions. Amnesty International said Sheikh Ali's conviction was another clear example of Bahrain's flagrant disregard for international obligations and called for his immediate release. The United States believes that no one, anywhere, should be prosecuted or imprisoned for engaging in peaceful expression or assembly. Any charges against Sheikh Ali that were brought on that basis should be dropped. The U.S. also strongly urges the government of Bahrain to abide by its commitment to the protection of freedom of expression.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.